This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
Welcome everybody to the final episode of Cinematica Animalia for the season, the podcast where we take a movie, oh, fuck's sake. The podcast where we take Adam's nipples and just tweak them as hard as we can. Sorry, for everybody not listening in, Adam has just, he's made a very provocative post. He's been at the Pride Festival in, Fayetteville today.
More like Gayetteville, am I right?
Gayetteville. Woohoo! Anyway, the podcast where we take someone's favourite movie, Monster, Gremlin, Crazed Parasites, and try and see how they might work in the real world by looking at their ecology and physiology. Today, we are doing the Royal Rumble, where we pit all the monsters of the season up against each other and see who comes out on top and who is the most ridiculous. But before we get into that, my name is Sam Perrin. I'm a PhD candidate at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. I also run Ecology for the Masses. With me today is co-host number one and co-host number two, finally in the same in the same chat
room.
The
boys are back in town.
I know, I'm very happy.
Adam Hishak, also a PhD candidate at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. It's the last episode of the season, so I'll pronounce Arkansas correctly. I will deign to pronounce that one correctly. I will not pronounce your last name correctly.
You're so generous.
Yes, and fellow Ecology for the Masses author, and also co-host number two, Davet, or Dave for short, our veterinary friend operating out of Canada. How's field season going, Adam?
Holy shit. Oh, this is like the longest slow... It's been 1 week, and it's already like the longest field season of my life.
Yeah.
So we have to go to these ponds, and every single pond we need to sample for larvae first, which takes anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour 15. Mm-hmm. And after that... we have to sample for adults for 3 hours. And at some of these ponds, they're like the size of this kitchen. So it's 3 hours walking in circles around this itty-bitty pond, just catching as many bugs as possible. And it's real hot and humid here.
Yeah.
And my back's just hurting a lot from standing up. I have to work on my posture and not hold my net wrong because my shoulder gets fucked up if I'm holding like my net like this the whole time.
When's it over?
It's great, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's kind of the typical thing. Like, field season is hell while you're in it, and then you miss it as soon as you get back to the office.
Exactly. The good thing about my system, though, is like they only come out when the weather's nice. So if it's too windy, they're not out. If it's raining, they're not out. If only sunny and above 15 degrees Celsius.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've tried to get into more, well, not really field work, because, you know, I study freshwater fish ecology. I've tried to get into fishing recently, and my God.
You do modeling.
Yeah. I do a lot of modeling work, yeah. But, no, me my too. God, there's a lot of things that I'm shit at, but this takes the cake, I think.
How many fish have you accidentally killed?
Well, look, I haven't accidentally killed any. I haven't killed any on purpose either. I think I've, by driving other fishermen off from the spot I've been fishing from, I think my partner and I have actually, you know, improved the chances of a fish surviving on the lakes we've been to.
Nice.
Yeah. It's been very good nice. Fun, yeah. Also, we are Cinematic Animalia, but we like to dive into the TV shows from time to time. When it comes to good movie monsters, last weekend we finished The Terror.
I am really excited to watch that. I read the book. Ooh, it's really good.
Yeah, get into that. And I know the depiction of the beast in the TV show differs a little bit from what it does in the book. But man, that is
probably the background too.
That is, yeah, it's a creepy looking thing. My God, and it's for those who haven't heard of this before, it's basically there was a voyage to
the Erebus and the Terror.
Yeah, the Erebus and
in
the Terror.
In 1845, I believe, 1845 to 1848.
Yeah. So there was a voyage to find the Northwest Passage, which is like the passage through Canada, which took place. Yeah, as Adam said, in the 1800s. And basically it failed and everyone went missing. They found a bunch of bodies later. They actually discovered the Erebus and the Terror within the last 5 years, both of them.
Yeah, recently.
Yeah. And this basically is like an imagining of what happened. So it's kind of like, you know, the men suffering through these horrible things that are happening to them, dying from scurvy, from lead poisoning, and also maybe there's a big fucking monster chasing them.
Cool. Yep.
And it is.
The book is really, really good.
Yeah.
I cannot recommend that enough.
And the TV show, god damn, like it's amazing. If you love Jared Harris in Chernobyl, if you've just recently watched Chernobyl, you'll love Jared Harris.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's incredible. He's very good
at this thing. Also, just for Chernobyl, it's like it's not quite a monster movie, or not. It's not monster related at all. Yeah. But I'm talking about harrowing cinema or harrowing television, like radiation is no fucking joke. That show is insane.
And there's a fantastic example of science communication in the final episode, like when they explain how the Chernobyl crash happened. It's done so well. I'm not sure if that's exactly what happened, because I mean, one of the biggest problems with Chernobyl is a lot of like propaganda came out of like the Russian side. There's still a lot of things that, you know, we don't know if this is true or if this is what they say just happened, but it's really well done. Yeah.
From my understanding of it, that is exactly what happened. Basically, it was incompetence. It was them trying to look good for their superiors, not being safe enough, and like Jared Harris,
yeah.
Like Jared Harris explained, it was basically when you have the tips of these rods that are supposed to slow down the reactor, they actually have the substance that accelerates it at the very tip. So as soon as you put those in, the whole thing goes, and that's why it blew up.
Yeah. Dave, anything interesting on your side?
Canada is good. I'm enjoying the spring and the summer where everything starts to set in. We're starting to see an increase in a certain number of like toxicities associated with various things. So since Canada has legalized marijuana, our pot dog numbers have gone through the roof, which but it's nice. People are more willing to talk about it now. Like when they come in, there's no like scared teenager like standing in the background while like the parents like, there is absolutely no way that the dog could have been exposed to marijuana, and you've got this like teenage son who's in the background who's like, yeah, no, probably not, no, but like what would the signs look like? And you're like, people are much more willing to basically say like, yeah, that definitely is in the house. And it's also just a nice reminder of what types of that basically pot does all types, in terms of I've definitely had like these older sweet couples that have come in with their little dog and they're like, we partake occasionally, and they're like, and I'm like, all right,
we partaketh in the Mary Jane.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. God,
there were so many dogs at the Pride Parade. It was amazing. There was a pit bull with a little pink cowboy hat on, and it was my best friend. And there was a doggy drag show. I'm not sure how that works, but they had one.
Oh, I'm not a fan of dressing pets.
No.
I think for me it's more problematic with the idea of like assigning gender or sex roles to animals.
Yeah, anthropomorphic values, yeah. Every time we talk about my birds, because we've got a male and female bird, and they fight a lot. So we're just like, oh, they're never going to get on, they're never going to fuck. But I mean, they're like, they're birds, they're not humans, so. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They could be fighting and they'll fuck in the next second.
All right, we'd better get started because we've killed a fair bit of time now. in any case, yeah. So what we're doing today is a little bit different from last time. We're first of all going through the 8 monsters that we looked at this time around. I was considering throwing Andre's made a monster in there, but since it was kind of designed specifically by an ecologist, I figured maybe we just leave that one out. Yeah,
good idea.
I think you did it, and also the main problem we had was just with the flying, and I think we've got that covered in a couple of others. So we're gonna of all the monsters that we addressed, I think by far the most realistic and the least there's no real problems with this was the big gorilla wolf motherfuckers from Attack the Block.
Attack the Block.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any real problem with them. I mean, the fluorescent jaws were a bit dodgy, but
I mean, they're doable. It was more just the arrival on Earth was the big sort of
and survival through space.
Yeah,
their evolution or physiology on another planet works fine, I think. Yeah,
yeah. Yep. I mean, they were reasonably sized, reasonably speeded creatures, and
after that, if we go to the other end of the spectrum, I think it's kind of a toss-up between Godzilla and the Game of Thrones dragons. I think Godzilla comes out on top as the most preposterous, just because he's got the feeding on radiation, which is ridiculous, the atomic breath, and the size.
Oh, and his ecology just fell apart when you guys were.
Yeah.
His everything falls apart. Like, if you take away the fire breathing, the dragons, for the most part, work. They're just a little bit too big.
Yeah. They can't
fly. But for Godzilla, everything about that is fucked.
Yeah.
He's too big.
Yep.
He's not going to be able to eat enough. You can't feed on radiation. It destroys you.
Yeah.
Once again, watch Chernobyl. You'll see what it does to something that's alive.
Yeah.
It fucks you up.
Yeah. It makes you shoot puppies. So that was a harsh scene. God damn. Have you... okay, Dave, really, you should watch Chernobyl.
My current partner keeps telling me over and over again that, yes, I need to
watch it. You keep being surprised by all the amazing actors that are in it. I was like, Stellan Skarsgård's in this? Yeah. Fuck!
It's also very weird hearing, like, traditional Russian, like, names being said by,
British.
Like, very far northern English accents, yeah. And then there's this weird bit where they get, like, Ukrainian or Belarusian soldiers in and they've all got American accents, which is very strange. That that guy from American Animals... you know, the really whiny one, not Evan Peters, but he was the teenager who came in to shoot the puppy. Yeah,
is he American?
Yeah, he's American. Yeah, oh, he was in American Animals. And,
what a scene to be defined by.
He looks like Ty Sheridan if Ty Sheridan got stung in the face by a bee. Right now, so obviously we're saying the dragons are the second worst. I think.
Sure.
Yeah. Yep. GOT dragons.
Hands down.
Now the third worst, I think, could take a lot. So let's come back to that in a second. I think the second most likely here was kind of the forest god.
Thank God.
I was about to ask about that.
It sucked.
But I mean, it's not that far of a... It's not that much of a stretch, I don't think. Like, the second most... I think this is the second most realistic because it's just kind of a moose that got real aggressive and is in really bad shape.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, we decided that it doesn't look like that normally. It's just kind of been burnt and... gone kind of psychotic.
And I think one thing we also touched on was it doesn't really have like human limbs coming out of its face. That was more just a product of the people who's the person who survived that movie in a very, very rough state of starvation, terror, everything, just imagined that's what he saw.
The human limbs would push this a lot further down the chart into the other end. But
also the human limbs coming out of its
back. Oh,
just the human limbs sticking out of everywhere.
The hip arms.
Yeah. Now,
That was just such a joy seeing Dave's mental unraveling in the chat about this. Just like, it has there's arms. There's more out of his face. There's more arms! Just like, it's just going and going.
He's a great
monster.
We're
kind of making our way towards the middle here. We've gone big gorilla wolf motherfuckers first, most reasonable, followed by the forest god, and then we've got Godzilla, the dragons, at the other end. Now, this is a toss-up, so I want you guys to give us your opinion. I have either the Carathon or Pikachu as the next least likely.
Carathon.
I think the Carathon.
Carathon. Just too many parts, isn't it? Too many parts and the whole pressure
parts,
thing that
they too big.
Yeah, talking and just... Yeah, there was a lot there.
And also not eating for thousands of years. It's just not going to work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's eating those weird, what are they called, the nasty, bitey things.
Trench.
The trench. It's eating
the trench.
It's eating trench.
Apparently they're getting their own
movie. Yeah, brother.
Very strange decision.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah. So after that, I know we've got the mermaids in there, but I actually think Pikachu is a lot kind of... Like the, you know, as Pikachu is supposed to be in
in the world of Pokemon. I mean, from evolutionary changes to generating huge chunks of lightning.
Even just the size of his legs.
Directed lightning.
Yeah.
Size of his legs and arms.
Yeah, it's he's basically a, like, cylindrical ball with little nubs for limbs.
Yeah.
I still stand by the fact that Pikachu is just simply a midget in a yellow costume who only fights people in thunderstorms and throws lightning rods
small
at
person.
People. Yes.
Yeah, or a little person.
Yeah, a small person.
Now,
I think it's a little person.
Yeah, but that sounds really patronizing. But then again, I don't know.
It does.
We've got down to the middle, and we've got two left over, and I can't figure out which of these is worse. So we've got Toothless. who look a lot smaller, getting towards the size where I think he could theoretically fly a little bit.
His wings seem to be big enough.
Yeah.
Seem to be.
Yeah.
Getting, and then versus the one of the big problems with Toothless, I think, is the whole fireball thing. But again, if he's just, you know, projectile vomiting at people, then
yeah, it's not that terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible.
Could work once or twice.
And then we've got the mermaids. Now the mermaids we had to make some concessions for.
They're mammals.
But considering how ridiculous the concept is, I think.
I mean. It depends on, I mean, we kind of shifted between just making them straight up manatees versus tidal dwellers versus...
Yeah.
I mean, in their truest, pure form of this creature that can go all the way up to the surface and come back down and has human skin and weird, then, like, I think Toothless would end up beating them out. But if we do sort of our concession version that we ended up coming up with, which is basically just a manatee or a dolphin, but slightly sexier...
Yeah.
Then I think that
doesn't
they
get much sexier than a manatee. I'll tell you that right now.
So it depends on if we want to say like an absolute pure mermaid. I think Toothless would end up winning.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then look. That's our official ranking for the season. Is the big gorilla wolf motherfuckers coming out as the most likely, followed by the forest god, followed by the mermaids and Toothless. Let's say, although that's quite. Even, and then Pikachu, the Karathan, the dragons from Game of Thrones, and then coming in a very distant last, Godzilla, which is very, unfortunate very because distant. I think he's my favorite of all those monsters, just as purely from a movie monster point of view.
I think the forest god's mine. That thing is so fucking cool.
It is, yeah.
I had a lot of fun with the dragons this season, though, from How to Train Your Dragon. Yeah. Just all the weird
Dave, we don't want to know what you're doing in the bedroom.
Well, for those... as I said, this isn't going to be the last episode of this season. We're going to take a break after this. But there'll be some supplementals popping up here and there before the next one starts up. And in one of them, Dave and TJ have promised to come up with an organism that could theoretically fly and shoot flame at its mouth. So
yeah, I think we've got... wait, it has to fly? You never told me
it
had to fly.
Oh, okay, no, it doesn't have to fly. Fine, it doesn't have to
fly. Oh, thank God.
And yeah,
come on, Dave. Don't you want a challenge?
So there'll be a couple of episodes. Right. So now let's move on to pinning them against each other. Now what we're just going to do is play, you know, kind of a knockout round here. First episode versus second episode, and so on. So first up, we have the Karathan, and I have no idea how we're going to get these two to fight against Toothless.
The Karathan against Toothless. Yeah.
So I think what we're going to have to go with is kind of like the Karathan as a surface dweller, not as a deep sea creature.
Okay.
Versus Toothless. Now, keep in mind that Toothless is not shooting exploding fireballs. He is shooting chunks of flaming meat.
Is the Karathan as big as it is in the movie?
I was about to say...
Can't be as big as it is because we're trying to make these things realistic. So it's got to be a lot more basic in terms of all the segments that it's got. But let's say it's, you know, it's able to flail about with some things. But I think Toothless, if he was a smaller animal, and, you know, maybe we went for the sort of thing that you have in Game of Thrones. Still a goofy-looking guy, but arms as wings as opposed to arms and wings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I think the Karathan's going to take it. It's too big.
Really?
And also,
even scaling it down,
I don't,
a small dragon like Toothless doesn't stand a chance.
I don't think that the Karathan is going to be able to ambulate all that well on land. I'm worried Toothless is just going to shoot chunks of flaming material at the poor Karathan, and the burns and damage, regardless, even if the Karathan somehow killed Toothless, I think it would succumb to its injury shortly after.
I don't think the Karathan can survive as a surface dweller.
Right.
It's got crab legs, sure, but it's going to be more of a giant version of a tidal dweller where it's in the water still, but it's shallow enough that the pressure's not going to be a problem. So it's going to be wet. It's going to be able to submerge itself if Toothless can even land a shot on it.
Yeah.
And it's just going to pluck him out of the sky and crush him.
I'm giving this to Karathan purely because of this video I saw maybe a couple of weeks ago where an octopus pulled a seagull down.
Oh my God.
And drowned it and ate it. So...
Cephalopods are the coolest animals.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm giving it to the Karathan just based off that. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Now, The next one is kind of fun. And because it's some sort of hominid, I think we have to give the mermaid a couple of teammates, like we did when they went up against Bruce the Shark. So, a pod of mermaids, let's say 5 or 6, going up against the big gorilla wolf motherfuckers.
Are there 5 or 6 the big gorilla wolf motherfuckers?
I think we're just going to leave them at maybe 2 or 3 of them. But they're at the shoreline, right? The big gorilla wolf motherfuckers see the mermaids basking, right? The mermaids can get to the shore where they can potentially pull the big gorilla wolf motherfuckers in. They've got some tools, maybe. Yeah, how do you think it goes down?
I think the big gorilla wolf motherfuckers are too quick, and they're just going to keep them out of the water where they can't be that effective, and they're just going
to
tear them to pieces.
We don't know if they can swim, though, and we don't know how fast the mermaids might be able to return to the water.
Well, with all that fur, you'd think they'd be pretty bad in the water, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
They would not be good swimmers.
Right. Yeah.
They'd be like a dog. Like, they can paddle, sure, but they're not going to be able to move like a sea creature
can. I think this is super dependent on whether or not the mermaids are using tools and how close they are to the water.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. If they're not close enough to the water, then they're fucked.
They're
I still think that even if they are close to the water, the bigger wolf motherfuckers, if there's 2 or 3 of them, they're going to get at least 1 or 2 mermaids.
Yeah, they're probably going to catch one of the weaker mermaids, one of the sand mermaids.
Yeah. No, they ain't going to go for me. I'm too big. They go for the small little runt, the TJ of the mermaids.
Damn.
The poor TJ mermaid.
TJ, not on here, and he's still copping shit. Poor guy.
I'd be one of the gorilla wolf motherfuckers.
Yeah, you would. You're hairy enough.
Yeah, they're more than enough.
Yeah. Okay.
I think some of the wolf motherfuckers might tell Adam to shave to take it down a little bit.
Yeah. See, we've got...
I'm not
with
that
the other
hairy.
One, we've got two aggressive we've got two aggressive things, but I think the mermaids are just going to want to get the fuck out of there. And they're probably going to take some losses. So I think this goes as a loss to the mermaids, and we're just going to get to the big gorilla wolf motherfuckers, yeah.
I think so.
Especially like if you're up in like where the big wolf motherfuckers would be chilling out, because I mean the amount of hair they've got on them, they're going to be temperate creatures, right? I think we decided. Very dense temperate forests, and up in that area of the world, anything that's a sea dweller are not going to be that fast. So I think I think the big wolf motherfuckers have got this.
Leopard seals are pretty fast.
Yeah, but I mean we said that as we go up, the mermaids are going to get a lot fatter and.
Yeah.
I think the big rule of motherfuckers have got this.
Yeah, and if they've got the standard arms, it's going to suck for trying to ambulate on land.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so, next up, we have... So, who have we got as our winners so far that'll face off in the next round? We've got the Karathan
versus the motherfuckers.
That's going to be even worse. Oh, dear. Okay, so next we have the Forest God from The Ritual. Big old carnivorous moose. Going up against the Game of Thrones dragons. Now, we conceded that these are much smaller dragons.
Yep.
Still able to produce flame in some capacity, but no force behind it, like you see in the Game of Thrones TV show.
Right.
So it's obviously, you know, it's still fire. It's going to hurt. But that forest god thing can obviously take a licking from fire and keep moving.
The question is, where is it happening?
Well, you would think it'd be out in a field somewhere. So they've seen it.
Yeah,
feeding, They've seen it browsing up against some trees, and they've gone in. Now, you would think that if the crazed moose forest god gets in amongst the trees,
they're fucked.
They're fucked. Because the dragons are going to have to probably get down to land. There's that dense, thick forest that we saw in that, in that movie. But again, it's
old growth forests too.
Yeah, and where you're going to get lost, visualization is going to be difficult. We know that the old forest god camouflages pretty well, and I worry it would just stomp the dragon to death.
Yeah, I mean, it's like dragons are going to attack from above, and that thing's got some big antlers, like, and
those
spinous processes sticking out the back as well.
And I think Adam is right here in that we never see the forest god. In fact, it avoids a field, so I don't think there'd be any confrontation between
we have to force a confrontation here. It's at the edge of the field, you know, browsing from the tree. It's the end of winter, resources are low.
I think it's the end
of winter, because then it's too cold for the dragons to fly
around. I think it's going to retreat into the forest and draw the dragon in.
Yeah. I think the dragon's fucked.
If the dragons pursue... I think the forest god's going to be able to kill at least one of them.
Yeah.
If they're able to get a jump on it and get in the clearing before it can get out, maybe burn it. It'll die of its wounds.
Yeah.
But,
Okay, now we have a really interesting one coming up. Pikachu versus Godzilla.
Wait, who won the last one? We don't even say.
Forest God.
I think the Forest God would win. Okay, because so, I don't think the Forest God would be that far from the edge of the woods. We don't see it go. I think it would probably lure the dragon in, and then it would go all crazy, psychopathic. I'm going to kill you. I mean, I'd love to see the...
Sorry, go, Dave. Yeah.
I'd love to see the Forest God trying to put the dragon up in the tree. That would be a really awkward scene as a hiker to walk in on it, and like it's trying to get it up into the tree.
Yeah. I think even if the dragon managed to attack the Forest God in a clearing, like if we're assuming the dragon's about the same size as the Forest God here, I think that'd still be a fucking hell of a fight.
Yeah, I think it'd be still...
Yeah.
It would be.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, on ground, the dragons can move and they can thrash around, but they're not that ambulatory. But I'm also going to be pulling from the book for this. The Forest God is fucking fast. It can move.
Yeah.
And they'd be done.
Oh, and it's better built for terrestrial ambulation in terms of, like, moving through the forest and the woods. Hooves are better than that.
Stop saying ambulation. Stop saying ambulation. Say walking.
Fine!
Or movement.
And it can... Also, just saying, the Forest God can punch you in the face with its face, yeah, so you're fucked.
There you go.
Less that.
Right. So, Godzilla versus Pikachu. Who have you got?
Didn't we say we're going to take Godzilla out of this because there's no way that anything
can
win against
him
ever?
No, but come on, let's...
How many Pikachu?
No, but so, in the fights...
Ooh, I like that.
In the fights during the season, we took the movie version, generally. But I think in this case, because we've been taking like the modified versions, we didn't even attempt to modify Godzilla because he'd end up just looking like a bit of a dinosaur, really. But I don't think, even if he does like get brought down to the size of a dinosaur, like the Gorosaurus that he's supposed to have evolved from in the Toho films, I don't think a small rodent slash opossum.
I think
with Pikachu, a fucking
Pikachu's fucked.
I think Pikachu is out of this. We can put him out of his misery.
I mean, if
throw him off to the sidelines.
If you had asked Pikachu versus a Tyrannosaurus Rex, I think we would have a pretty clear answer as to.
Yeah. Yes.
So the thing is, at least with this, if we're gonna try to get this down in terms of Pokemon. Pikachu is an electric type. Godzilla would most likely be a. There's science to this.
Okay.
Godzilla would be most likely be a combination water dragon type. Water is weak to electric for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
If you play Pokemon, it's very obvious. Duh, Dave, I see you looking at me.
Saw your cat stand up from your fridge and didn't realize that was a thing.
Freaked the shit out of
me as
well.
That is my stepdaughter, Ashes.
I thought that was a pillow!
Yeah, me too.
Ashes. She's lovely. She's sassy. So, but dragon is, they have resistance to electric type themselves. So I think that there won't be any kind of type advantage if we're looking at this from Pokemon sense. And Pikachu is, like we said, fucked.
Yeah. Second round, we now have the Karathen versus the big gorilla wolf motherfuckers. So let's treat it like a Fellowship of the Ring sort of thing. Where the Karathen has gotten up to the shoreline, has seen a couple of big gorilla wolf motherfuckers who have just chased off the mermaids, and has decided they're an easy meal, right? Does the Karathen succeed?
And they're all trying to get into the Mines of Moria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does the Karathen succeed in pulling them in and getting a feed, or do they manage to drag it up onto the land? This is very dependent on the size we make the Karathen, isn't it?
If the Karathen, let's just say it's the size of a giant squid, just to make this easier.
Yeah.
So anywhere from 20 to 25 meters, I think, is the estimate.
Yeah.
Maybe, 15 to 25 meters on the really, really high end. So for you heathens in the non-imperial countries, like 45 to 60 feet, just about 70 maybe. Counting its arms, so really, really big. I think they'd be able to pull it up if it's that size. Because in the water, they're strong. But those tentacles and those arms are not going to be that useful to grab something outside of the water itself. Unless it's using its crab bits, then maybe it could.
Dragging it back into land as well, like...
It'd be really difficult.
Hmm. I'm just going to look up on YouTube, octopus grabs. I hope I turn safe search on, so I don't get too much hentai porn. Tentacle porn, I should say.
Just being politically correct on all aspects today.
Octopus grabs. Fuck's sake. I'll cut this out. But seriously, the first... So I would just put in octopus grabs, and the first result is an octopus just latched onto a woman's butt.
Jesus.
Yeah. That's the world.
So here we go. Octopus leaps out of water, grabs crab. That's more what I was looking for.
I don't think the Carathon is going to be able to leap out of the water and grab anything.
Oh, shit.
No.
No, not at that size.
No. So, I mean, the big question is going to be... Depending on how close they get, I still think that the advantage normally goes in these types of situations to the aquatic animal. Just because if you're able to drag something in which is non-aquatic, you get the, you know, the crocodile and the gazelle moment, or you end up in a situation of, like, the beaver and the coyote here in Canada, which is a terrifying phenomenon.
Beavers pull coyotes in?
They can pull in larger predators, and then they actually will spin them under the water. So beavers will get themselves to a point that larger predators try to come after them, and then beavers will basically drag them underneath the water, try to disorient the same way that other large aquatic animals attempt to do.
Okay.
Beavers are terrifying. Wow,
that'd be good fun.
Sorry. But, yeah,
look. If you want to check this out a bit more, there's a video on YouTube. Extraordinary Octopus Takes to Land. It's got David Attenborough's silky tones over it, so give that a look. But look, I just think that if it gets up on land, it's going to be too slow. Those Gularilla Wolf motherfuckers are pretty fast. They're pretty strong. They're good climbers, so we know they've got good grips. And those teeth are like... I think they've got this.
Do you... I think in the water, if the gorilla... motherfuckers are as aggressive big gorilla wolf motherfuckers are as aggressive as we see them in the film, I think they're going to try to charge the Carathon prematurely when it's still in the water, and I'm worried the Carathon is going to grab one of them and just drag it under.
I don't know, there's like plenty of examples of species being very aggressive, the forest god being a great example, within their comfort zone but being very kind of like aware of their limitations.
Adam, deciding vote here.
Carathon, there's no way they're going to be able to... We decided there were two of them going after the mermaids. Two of them are not going to be able to pull the Carathon out of the water, even if it's in shallow water, and they're going to get either tricked or make an unfortunate slip on some wet rocks, get into the water, and the aquatic animal is going to have the advantage.
Fair enough. Okay. All right. I'll concede defeat then. Okay, so the next one...
Never happened before in his life.
Yeah, ever, Sam is not super gracious listeners. About it most of the time.
This is a big moment for me, okay? Let's not rub it in. Okay, so the next one we've got is the Forest God versus Godzilla. Now, this is a slightly more fair version.
How big is Godzilla?
We're just saying make Godzilla the same size as, let's say, just a bit larger than a Spinosaurus or a Titan, a Gigantosaurus. So, a bit larger than sort of carnivorous theropod. Still pretty big, yeah. But obviously he's still moving at the speed he moves at in the films. We're not going to give him any extra speed or anything like that. He's got a little bit of breath. But I honestly, I just don't see...
Halitosis, we call it.
Yeah, halitosis. Yeah, he's got the dragon. I just don't see how the forest god's going to be able to... Maybe he'll be able to avoid some of the attacks of Godzilla, but I don't see how he's going to be able to inflict any damage on Godzilla.
Where are they fighting?
Edge of a forest again?
I don't think it matters where they're fighting.
Yeah.
He is too big for any forest really to kind of contain his size.
Yeah, no, I think the forest god is fucked here.
Yeah, well, even, like, I don't want to say he's going to die easily, but I just don't see how he's going to be able to inflict any damage whatsoever on Godzilla.
I think he could inflict some damage, at least on the...
Couple of kicks?
Yeah, so he could gore him, he could really mess... He could, like, tear his legs up with his horns, his antlers.
Yeah, but I think if he gets in that close he's doing that sort of thing...
Yeah, I think Godzilla's just going to chomp him.
Yeah, that tail...
Yeah, Godzilla wins.
That tail whipping around. Like, we know he can use that tail quite effectively. Yeah. the chunky boy himself takes out another one. Now, that brings us to the final of the season, which is Godzilla versus the Carathon.
Ooh.
Okay, so, yeah, it's interesting. So I think if we give Godzilla, you know, a fairly amphibious kind of the same sort of gait that in water that he had in if you give the swimming technique, because he's doing butterfly stroke. Or freestyle, it makes a big difference.
He has his arms to his side, using his tail like a crocodile.
Tail kind of moves himself. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Sinusoidal.
But I don't think he's going to have much ability to manipulate anything with his arms.
They're not big enough or strong enough.
No, not in the water. Yeah.
Well, they're a lot chunkier. He's got some. He's probably done some curls in his day. I don't think he could do any shoulder presses, but I reckon he's been doing his arms day at the gym.
His just arms day. Sam works out a lot, you can tell.
Yeah. is that not a thing?
No.
There's a legs day. Why wouldn't there be an arms day?
There is leg day, and there's biceps leg or triceps day. And chest day.
Anyway, yeah, so look, he's probably been doing his arm day, but I... bloody arm chairs where I'm more comfortable, am I right? Hey. Anyway,
the dad jokes.
I don't think he's going to be able to. I don't think he's going to be able to grab, or maybe he'll be able to get a couple of bites into the carafin. Now,
he's got
if
a
the
real
carafin
small head.
Loses a limb or two,
if he loses a limb or two, the carafin will be fine. Like all those, you know, cephalopods, arthropods, like the crab bits of it, they lose limbs all the time, and they're just fine. Like the amount of spiders I see at my ponds that have seven or even six legs, they're having a great time.
Is this shallow enough that Godzilla can stand up from time to time?
I would think so.
I don't think that's going to work in his advantage, though.
It's not. But I mean, for instance, like if the Carathan can exert him enough underwater in the battle, then it could just drown him quite easily. And Godzilla's going to try to come up for air and not be able to get it. But if he can stand every now and then, that might give him an advantage.
I think it's also going to be
Tail's going to be a lot slower underwater.
Right, and I think it's also just going to be damage, right? Because we know that a lot of animals fight to the point of exhaustion or just, you know, blood loss has overtaken you. My biggest worry with the Carathan is just it is going to move faster underwater. I mean, it's not a perfect system with the way that its tentacles and limbs are designed, but I'm worried it's going to be able to do a lot more just visceral damage to Godzilla on multiple strikes and eventually just exhaust and bleed out Godzilla enough to... I don't think either of them is going to come out unscathed.
Is Godzilla going to be able to get a foothold and then drag it back up on land?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Because we saw in the most recent movie, King Ghidorah used its heads to just constrict Godzilla. The Carathan has more tentacles than Ghidorah has heads. And it can constrict him, strangle him, and use its pincers.
Also, dragging something out of water, I mean, we've all been in that situation of trying to get something like waterlogged or full of water out. I mean, it's freaking heavy. You have to break surface tension as you're dragging something out. I think it would be absolutely exhausting to try and pull the Carathan back onto land.
And the Carathan would be actively resisting.
Right.
And punching him the whole time.
And biting and striking and cutting and doing all kinds of damage.
And ambulating.
Okay. I can't believe we're doing this, but I think we're giving this season to the Carathan.
Yeah, if we make the restrictions. I mean, if Godzilla is as big as Godzilla is in the movie and has the ability to breathe atomic breath, the Carathan is fucked.
Everything is fucked.
Right, exactly.
The habitat of everything is fucked. Like, you just take that atomic breath and swipe out. I mean, the fragmentation one blast of that would cause to an ecosystem is enormous.
Yeah.
Now, this is the real question, right? The Carathan, voiced by Julie Andrews, versus Mary Poppins. Who's going to win that one?
Ooh, Julie Andrews, obviously.
Just Julie Andrews, not Mary Poppins? Okay.
She won in both cases.
Or maybe even Tilda Swinton, because she would be there.
Just enunciate the hell out of the thing, and then,
exactly.
In the day.
You just etiquette them to death.
Yeah. How about Julie Andrews in My Fair Lady? No, was that Julie Andrews in My Fair Lady?
I don't think so.
The rain falls. The rain in Spain falls mainly.
Falls mostly on the plain. Mainly on the plain.
Mainly.
Mostly.
Mostly.
Falls mostly on that ground there.
The American.
The moisture in Catalonia. Audrey Hepburn, not Julie Andrews.
Audrey Hepburn, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense. Actually, thinking back.
You make sense.
No.
I do.
Do you?
Alright, well look, that's it for us. We'll be back next season. Thank you for tuning in to everybody who came in this season. If you've got suggestions, over the next few weeks we're going to get together a list of monsters that we're going to cover in season 3, which we are glad
to... The Terror!
I think we should definitely do Tunbak.
I really want to do Starship Troopers at some point too. Like
the big insects.
Why the ecology would be fantastic.
Yeah,
I know.
And look, I think we should just get stuck into some pop culture classics as well. I think we're ready at this point to tackle the Xenomorph.
Nice. Yep.
And also, season 3 of Stranger Things coming out. I think that's got to be our first stop is the Demogorgon.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I'm fully on board with that until you get to the bipedal stage.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. All right.
Yeah. Now, so Adam, for the last time in the first half of 2019, do you want to take us home?
Absolutely. You can find Sam and I on Twitter at SamParentNTNU. I'm at HassockAdam, tweeting about science stuff, fun little science thoughts. We think we're very clever. You can find the podcast at C_Animalia. If you want to check out our website, cinematicaanimalia.com. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or if you have those monster suggestions for the next season, cinematica.animalia@gmail.com. If you want to see some more of the harder science stuff that Sam and I do, but also in a format meant for the non-scientific public, you can check out ecologyforthemasses.com. And remember, the monsters aren't real, but the science is.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.